Chairperson of the board. With me today from the board is Mr. Liz Temple, who's with us today, and Daryl Erasmus, the Chief Quality Assurance Officer and his team, and I'll leave it to Daryl to introduce his team and give to his presentation. I think just to start off by saying thank you very much to the committee for inviting us to come and do this presentation today to you. I think tourism grading is one of the most important aspects, quality grading, is one of the most important aspects of the work that we're doing. It doesn't matter how good you market a destination, but if the quality of the experience doesn't live up to what you're promising, then we're going to set ourselves up with failure. And SAT and Daryl's team have done a commendable job in getting our systems into place and getting them right, and I think they've been emulated by many other countries in Africa as well for the work that they're doing. The advantages of grading are numerous. I know there's recently been questions about why should you pay for it, but I think Daryl and his team will explain to you exactly what the cost of grading actually goes into, and they'll cover sort of their mandate, where they get their mandate from, and the processes, and hopefully answer a lot of questions that are probably sitting in your mind. So with that introduction, I'll hand over to Daryl. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good to be here. Honourable Members, thank you for your time today, and we look forward to engaging with you. I think before we start, if I may just ask the team that I've brought with to introduce themselves, and then we can commence with the presentation. So I'm hoping you know I am Daryl Erasmus, the Chief Quality Assurance Officer, and the privilege to lead the quality assurance mandate for South African tourism.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Adami Milan. I work for the Department of Tourism, and part of my responsibility is public entity oversight.
I'm Nicole Daniel. I'm Quality Assurance and Development Manager. I am with the Tourism Grading Council, responsible for the grading criteria.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Nelisile Yengwa. I'm the National Quality Assessment Manager. So I oversee the physical assessments within the Tourism Grading Council of South Africa.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Genevieve Joseph, and I run the Quality Protection Team, part of the Grading Council of South Africa.
Okay. The gentleman who has just joined us is Honourable De Freitas, who comes from Gauteng. You can see there's over representation of Gauteng in this committee, representing the Democratic Alliance. You're welcome, Honorable Freitas, no problem. As you know, Honorable Members, we have been looking forward to meet with the Tourism Grading Council of South Africa, basically for tourism. The first one is familiarization with the committee. This is the committee of the sixth administration of Parliament. So we need to familiarize ourselves with yourselves to get to know one another, because we are going to be working together for at least 5 years, all things being equal. The second reason is for us to ensure that as the grading council, you understand the point from which we are coming from as an oversight body mandated by Parliament to do oversight on tourism throughout the country. We are a committee that believes that our approach to doing oversight should not be and antagonistic in its posture. We believe in cooperation. We believe in making sure that we are always vigilant and not easily co-opted into things that may not be in line with the principles of oversight. But we also believe in a reciprocative approach to doing our work as a committee. We are accessible, we are open, we are transparent. because we believe that we are at different platforms, but our objective is to ensure that we grow tourism. And as we contribute to growing tourism, the impact will be on poverty, inequality, and unemployment. So that's the really the objective of this meeting today, for you to tell, say to us also, who are you, how do you do your work, and so on, so that we can understand each other better. Last week when we met honorable members, we spoke about the Springboks. And by then we were left with two teams. And I did indicate that South Africa will be the focus of all media and all ensembles throughout the world because of the triumph of the Springboks in the finals of the Rugby World Cup in Japan. So all the doubting Thomases, that matter has been settled. So there's no debate on what the British can do, England, what we can do, and so on. That matter is closed. So for the next 4 years, so for the next 4 years, we are the reigning champions, and we are going to be defending this cup in 2023. So the question will be, how do we use this achievement? Over and above celebrating, yes, we must celebrate. But what will be the opportunity cost of not using this achievement productively to contribute to the economy of South Africa, particularly tourism? That will be answered elsewhere. Department of Sports, working with the Department of Tourism, and those who strategize on behalf of the executive. We can only do oversight. But we congratulate the Springboks for doing very well and making history that for the first time there's a black man, not only in South Africa, globally, you have a black man presiding over such a triumph and hoisting the cup, our captain, Siya Kolisi, from the province of Litten. Abundance of many things. That is the Eastern Cape. So we congratulate the Springboks, the captain, the president went there to give them courage. All the South Africans were behind, the African continent were behind the team. And we hope that it can also contribute somehow in bringing us together as a nation. And we hope that in the next 4 years we can retain the cup again. So we're doing well. So that matter is now closed on our members. Remember some people were saying, hey, we can't beat England, whatever. It's about tactics on the day for 80 minutes. Not about your reputation. So England has a reputation. We were the masters of the tactics on the day. They had the reputation because all blacks beat us, and they beat the all blacks. So everybody was saying it's obvious that they are going to beat us. That's the mentality that informed them, and they had some element of hidden arrogance, which was bruised after. After that, so their egos have been dealt a serious blow, England. So they now understand us better. They even want the coach to go. That's the amount of damage we cause to other countries if they disrespect South Africa through rugby. So they are chasing the coast. But today we are dealing with the grading council. We will give you an opportunity to do a presentation. After that, we will have members of the committee interacting. We have been looking forward to meet with the grading council. I'm sure our CQAO, yes, CQAO, that's how we must call you. Darren, CQAO, knows that we have been saying we want to meet with the grading council so that we can understand things and move from the same wavelength on many things. So the opportunity is to you to now do the presentation, after which we will engage. Honorable members, we hope that we should be done by what? Half past 12? Is it okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Over to you, our colleagues. You are welcome, officially now. Great to see you.
Thank you, Chair, very much. And we also value the opportunity to come and spend some time with the committee. And as you said, familiarize the committee with the hard work that takes place behind the scenes in our offices in Johannesburg. You'll note I'm the thorn amongst the roses today.
Yeah.
And that is very much the case at the head office as well. We have lots of lovely ladies, and very capable and able ladies leading the charge for the grading council from our head office in Joburg. Chair, we've tried to put together an agenda which will give you the best possible oversight and best possible insight into the work that we do. So I've given you the agenda in the pack, and we're going to start off by the mandate and then move into things that are a little bit more operational, the systems that we use, the cycles that we go through, how we monitor the usage of STARS. We're going to talk a bit about our infrastructure. We're going to talk a little bit about the team and the extended team, the assessors, how we contract with them and how we model the business model around the assessors. And we're going to end off with the benefits of grading and share with you the current performance for the entity. What we've also decided to do, Chair and Honourable Members, is just tag team as a team. So I'm going to do a couple of slides and I'll hand over to the relevant member of the management team who's more focused on that particular section of the business. But I think we're very fortunate to have a group of individuals here who are able to speak to all the different aspects of our business. So to get us moving, what I've given you is the mandate of the Grading Council and where it comes from. The Tourism Act 3 of 2014 is where the legislation allows the minister to develop a national grading system. And this is specifically for tourism, and it's geared and is focused on its standards and the maintenance and the improvement of standards within the tourism space, specifically geared towards services, facilities, and products. In the Act, it also defines what a grading system needs to promote. I'm not going to regurgitate this in the packet we gave you. But what I do want to highlight here is that it's a relatively broad mandate. So when you speak to the different kinds of schemes or systems we can implement, you'll note here that in the Act it says it's only for tourism services, facilities, products, and obviously it needs to allow for the grading and classification of those different products. So on to the next slide. What I've done there is just highlight our areas of focus at the moment. So we focus predominantly on the accommodation, the lodging sector, we call them establishments, and we also have criteria in place to grade specific venues. Now, we've recently reviewed our grading standards, and when we get to that part of the presentation, Knox will speak to a bit more to the subcategorization. But the mandate actually allows us to create systems and grading systems and criteria for the other aspects of the tourism value chain. We don't do that at the moment, and we haven't got criteria for it, and it's largely resource. It's largely as a result of resources. As a unit of South African Tourism, we have a headcount freeze, and obviously we have specific resource constraints from a finance perspective. So I just wanted to make sure that the committee knows that whilst the desire to move into these new parts of the value chain and quality assurance is there, but there are a number of constraints that don't allow us to do so. Moving then on to what we've crafted as our the vision and the mission for this particular entity. Because South Africa competes for global tourists, it's very important that we have an internationally benchmarked, but more importantly, an internationally recognized set or grading system and set of criteria that go with that. And what that must do is allow inbound tourists, international tourists, the ability to predict an expectation. And that's why we use the star grading system. Part of our mission, and Dawn, our board member here, alluded to this in the opening remarks, is South African tourism does a fantastic job of marketing destination South Africa to the globe. And they're comforted in the fact that when these individuals or groups, business events, whatever it might be, travel to South Africa, that there's a set of quality assured products, specifically in the hospitality space, so your accommodation and your lodging, but also in the venue space, that have been quality assured against an international standard and can live up to what is being promised in those particular markets. I'm going to hand over to Nelly Sewitt, who's going to take you through our grading process and a number of different slides linked to that. And then she's, I think, going to hand over to Knox following that, and I'll join in a little bit later. Nelly?
Honourable members, I will take you through the grading process, the milestones thereof, which is on slide 6. Our grading system is pretty much characterized by being an annual system, in that once you have been accredited as a graded member, you need to renew your membership every year. It is a levy system. It is voluntary. And it is highly automated and digitally driven. I will take you through each and every milestone as to what happens behind the office or behind in terms of internal processes and how then we get to interact with the prospective members. Should one decide to apply to be graded, they need to submit an online application on our tourism grading website. Unfortunately, we do not accept any telephonically written or faxed applications. It is a quite informative website in the sense that if you are a new member, you get to now sort of identify in the space that you want to operate in. We've got the criteria available where then you get to see which categories best fit your business or operations. Are you formal accommodation? Are you guest accommodation, self-catering, and so forth? It then also specifies in terms of the star grading levels. If you are wanting to target a certain star grading level, what do you need quantitatively as well as qualitatively in terms of ensuring that outside, once you are accredited as such, you then achieve that star grading level as such. The online process then comes back to head office where then we pre-approve. The process of pre-approval determines that we need to verify that all the information that you've provided, which also has an impact on the grading fee invoice, is incorrect, accurate. We are now talking to the category, we're talking to the room units that you have at your establishment, as well as the average room rate. Those are the three factors that actually allow us to now come or make up a grading fee invoice that will be distributed at a later stage. After we have approved, we require that you pay your invoice within 30 days to actually get the process kick-started as such for us to be able to allocate an assessor to come and conduct a physical assessment within your respective establishment. The allocation of a assessor can be done by the prospective member wishing to apply, or in cases where they have not selected an assessor, the onus is at the or lies with the head office team to allocate somebody within the province in which they reside in, or within provinces in which they are then able to carry out inspections or physical assessments. It is imperative that once the invoice has been settled, the assessor or the allocated assessor contacts the establishment, because being a voluntary process as such, we are building a partnership with these tourism products, so they have to ensure that they set aside a suitable time for the manager or the owner or the representative of the accommodation establishment to ensure that when they get to the establishment, there is somebody to take them throughout and conduct a full inspection of their facilities, be it exterior, internal, public shared areas, which is outlined in the criteria as such. So when the assessors get there, they will look at that criteria, apply it according to the star grading level of which the member has applied for, as well as see what facilities and services are being offered by the actual products. It goes without saying that they cannot leave without giving proper feedback, comprehensive feedback, to the manager or the owner or the representative of the tourism product who has taken them through. It takes about half a day, I would say, depending on the size of the product, as well as depending on the membership cycle. Are they renewal or are they new application? It will take less time for renewal because you've been there, you're just looking at any improvements if they want to upgrade, or in the cases of where it's slightly been debilitated, where they now need to downgrade as such. And if it is a new application, you would now want to ensure that you experience all that is there to offer in terms of rooms, in terms of services and so forth. That feedback is given back to the manager or the owner, as well as submitted to head office, along with various checklists. Are they universal accessible? Do they have facilities in place? Do they ensure that they meet the premium grading if we want to motivate them as such? And we also take pictures, because we then at head office go through these pre-screening of assessments in terms of how what has the assessor recommended, what is there in line with the criteria, and are we then comfortable with the recommendation made by the assessor as such. That's what we call then the pre-screening, which is conducted by my team, the Provincial Quality Assurance Specialists, which are located within the various provinces. If all is well and all has been submitted correctly, then that gets submitted to what we call a multi-property approval meeting, which takes place every month, chaired by the CQAO, and it also then gives my team the opportunity to present on the odd 400 on a monthly, that's how many properties that we do submit into a meeting in terms of approval or rejection thereof. And once we have then approved, we supply their properties with a visit report. We issue them with a digital certificate, which is now confirming that yes, indeed, you are now accredited, and it would also then specify the validity period of your membership, which will be 12 months from that date of approval. You get then awarded or sent a plaque within 60 working days, confirming your membership. The plaque will then have the category that you have been allocated to or approved for, as well as the star grading level. And it also then will have a unique member ID number, which then assists us in terms of keeping track in terms of our membership database. To date, we have graded over 5,200 properties, and the majority thereof are within your guest houses, your bed and breakfasts, which make up about 80% of our membership, and 20% of those belong to the hotel chain and such. So the time frame, I would say, of being applied or applying as a member and going through all these different milestones for the grading process will take up to about 45 days. It's highly dependent on how soon the member can then pay the invoice for us to conduct these physical assessments. And then we do have the newer members. They don't need to go through the online application of logging onto the website. We simply make contact with them about 4 months within the expiry date to say, are you still wishing to be part and parcel of the grading family? If so, can you please then accept our terms and conditions? And then we kickstart the process again in terms of issuing an invoice and then paying a visit accordingly. On to slide 7. Our terms and conditions do make provision for those members whom we've accredited during the property approvals meeting who are not simply happy with the accreditation given. Be it the star grading level or be it the premium motivation. So what our processes stipulate is that they will then need to lodge within 30 days of being approved or rejected a complaint, a formal complaint to our sub-board committee, being the awards committee, in saying that they are appealing the accreditation that has been given to them. And what happens internally is that we will send one of the provincial quality assurance specialists located within the various provinces, as well as a different assessor, because oftentimes, in fact, since I've been with the Tourism Grading Council, I've only had two disputes, and it was new members who had perceived themselves as a different star grading level to what was recommended. So what we do is we send another set of fresh eyes, being an assessor, who will then conduct another physical assessment, as well as an internal member, one of the provincial quality assurance specialists, to do a post-audit verification in terms of do we then agree with the appeal or not. They're quite far and few in between, as I said, only two have been reported in 2015 and 2016. In terms of our grading annual fees, we come to our fees in terms of seeing what do we need to keep the lights on as well as the water running, and it is also aligned with the CPI rate. We increase our fees yearly, and we've had some few years where it remained, our fees remained as is. It was 2016 and 2017. After having a look, obviously, at the economic climate and the feedback that we have received from members within the database. So our fees are applicable to all the categories, being the formal accommodation, the guest accommodation, self-catering, and so forth. So on the next slide is what we call the grading fee tier, so as to call it. As I mentioned earlier, we use three variables in which we then calculate the fees. Those are the room units, which a business has within the facility, the category in which they're operating in, as well as the average room rate that they charge per person per night. So an example would be if I am a self-owned limited guest house, I have five rooms and I charge 750 per night, the annual fee, grading fee that will be applicable to me is 3,495, 91. If I'm a renewal member, that is. However, if I'm a new member, it will be the 3,491 as well as a joining fee, which then oversees the administration process of processing your application as such. And the next slide is then speaking to the SMME grading fee support program. This emanates from a partnership between the National Department of Tourism as well as South African Tourism in order to reduce fees for our membership base, as well as ensure that whatever fees would have been appointed or set aside for grading fees allow the SMMEs or businesses to further develop and also take care of whatever operational costs that they may have. And in terms of compliance, the requirements are that you need to ensure that you have a valid tax clearance certificate, you have a triple BEE certificate or some affidavits in terms of your medium enterprise or small enterprise operation. You also need to have business registration documents, a valid public liability insurance, being an accommodation establishment or venue looking after or accommodating a third party, as well as a liquor license if you are serving liquor on your premises as such. This will then, if you meet the necessary criteria, gives you 80% of your grading fee invoice. And further to that, if you then, as Thompson Levy contributing member, you get an additional 10%, which then leaves you with just only 10% of the grading fee invoice that you will need to settle. Since the inception of the tourism incentive program, we have funded over 6,000 properties to the value of 18 million. This year alone, we have funded 1,148 properties. So the intake is pretty much inclining, in fact, increasing as such, which is a good situation to be in terms of compliance. We do have other provinces who now have made tourism development and growth their top priority and agenda. We have provinces such as the Northwest and the Northern Cape. We also have City of Tshwane as well as Ugu South Tourism Coast, which have now taken out of their budget and given us a database of accommodation establishments and venues within their provinces, and they then pay, be it the 100% or the 10% of the invoice of the members in terms of now ensuring tourism support, SME support for any tourism products within their respective provinces as such. I will now hand over to Knox, who will then take you through the criteria as well.
Thank you. Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, I'll be taking you through the grading criteria and how we arrived at ensuring that there is a criteria that is equivalent to the world standard. So the criteria was last introduced, in fact, in the year 2000, and it was agreed that it will be reviewed every 3 years to ensure that we keep in par in terms of the standards. So within the 3 years, we always review and ensure that the criteria meets the global standard, in ensuring that we keep up with international trends as well as technological advancement. The criteria, the process of ensuring that the grading criteria is approved has to obviously go through the approval by the Selecting Tourism Board as well as the Minister of Tourism. In ensuring, as I said, that we keep up to date in terms of the world standards, we look into the global benchmarking exercise where we look at different countries that also have a grading system, such as the United Kingdom, Scotland, France, USA, Italy, and etc., to ensure that we are looking at the criteria that we are doing that is equivalent. However, it has to be unique to South Africa as an offering of the accommodation, of the different types of accommodation categories that we offer. Within the grading enhancements that we did in 2017, which was approved and introduced in 2019, we ensure that we look at the premium. We ensure that we look at properties that offer the best of the best, if I can put it like that, and ensuring that they achieve a certain percentage in terms of what we look at. So the premium categories will be looked at only at hotels, and it has to achieve a percentage of about 95% scoring. It has to be motivated by an assessor in terms of what that tourism establishment, be it a hotel, what does it offer in terms of international standards, in terms of any accolades that they have been provided, and any international recognition that they have been given. So therefore, as Lynn has indicated earlier, that during the monthly property approvals meeting, we also look at any properties that have been motivated to also receive a premium certificate. Including within the enhancements that we did, we've had to look at introduction of new criteria to cater for our tourists, once again ensuring that we are aligned to international standards. We introduced new categories such as small hotels within the formal categories, your boutique hotels and apartment hotels. I'll be able to take you through to what the different criteria, what does it mean, a definition of what a small hotel is as well as boutique hotel. And then within the meetings and venue, which was previously a miss within our previous criteria, we have renamed it to venues, and we have introduced different subcategories within the venues as well. We have about six different venues, which I will also introduce to you what the definition thereof will be. In addition to ensuring that we keep to the standards in terms of the venue, we ensure that your hotel category, your hotel accommodation, if they have, let's say, for instance, a venue as well as a hotel itself, it has to be graded differently. There is a criteria that is used for a venue, there's also a criteria that is used for yourself, and there is different fees in terms of charging that. And then there is also a club that is given to a hotel, which is different from what is given to a venue. We look at public area, obviously, in terms of ensuring that your venue is up to standard within the category. As mentioned, within the formal service accommodation, we have introduced the new categories, which is your small hotel, your boutique hotel, as well as apartment hotel. In the past, we only had a hotel as well as a lodge within the category. So if I were to define what a hotel is, it would be to say that it has to have a full or limited service to any traveling public, and we need to ensure that it has a reception area, which obviously receives all your visitors, and there has to be a dining facility within that space. A small hotel, on the other hand, also is expected to have a full or limited service. It has to have at least approximately up to 80 rooms, and it also has to have a dining as well as a reception. Once again, because it falls under the formal service hotel. The boutique hotel, on the other hand, is only within the 4 and 5 star rating level, and the decor of each room has to be unique. So it can't be a uniformed what you call decor, which would be classified under the formal hotel. So the highlight there, once again, is that it has to be within a 4 or 5 star criteria with 5 star level, and it has to be decorated differently. The apartment hotel, which is also a new and exciting category, if you look at your establishment such as the Capital Group, you'll find that what differentiates the apartment hotel from your different types of hotel accommodation is that it also has full and limited services. However, there has to be a kitchenette. If one doesn't want to, let's say for instance, stay in a formal hotel, and they would want to make use of a kitchenette, then one would obviously look at an apartment hotel. Moving on to our guest accommodation, as many said, this makes up largely 80% of our portfolio of our rated property. So your bed and breakfast accommodation would largely be in a house whereby there is a host that lives within the premises, and there is a sharing of dining facilities with the host, and there is also a provision of breakfast within that accommodation establishment. It is important that our visitors or our tourists or anyone that uses our facilities to ensure that they understand the different categories, because we find that there is also an expectation where there is no real understanding of what each category really means. Your guest accommodation, on the other hand, is a renovated house or a specifically designated building. There has to also be a breakfast provision, and there has to be exclusive use of your public facilities. So it can't be shared with your host. The country house, on the other hand, is also of a similar offering. However, it is in a country or natural setting, you can put it like that. There is an expectation of dinner that has to be provided by the host, as well as breakfast that has to be provided by the host. And once again, within this category, it is important to note also that there is exclusive use of public areas by the guests. We have within self-catering, we subdivided within the subcategory, which is your self-catering shared, as mentioned, self-catering shed is a name which indicates that there is a sharing of public facilities. There would be recreational facilities that will be shared within the guests or within the tourists. There has to be a reception, obviously, to receive a what you call tourist, but it is a minimum requirement. A self-catering exclusive, on the other hand, as the name indicates, that it is only for the exclusive use of that guest, so there will be limited sharing of any public facilities. So let's say, for instance, if a tourist is staying with a self-catering self-catering exclusive establishment, they will not share your kitchenette and that type of thing, or kitchen facilities. It will only be used by one person. We also have within our category your backpacker as well as your hosting accommodation. Your backpacker is more of a social and communal category. You would expect to share all these once again facilities within your within the guest, and it's more catered for youth. They have more interest in that type of center. You also have your caravan as well as campsite. The two things that separates the two categories is that your campsite facility does not specify that caravans can be used, whereas the caravan part, you are expected to bring your caravan as your form of accommodation, whereas a campsite, you can expect to come with a tent. So that is the difference between the two offerings. Within the game and lodge accommodation, we have, as indicated earlier, that within the past criteria, we had a lodge. So it has been divided to a game lodge as well as the nature lodge. And there is, once again, an expectation in terms of what the game versus what the nature lodge what one would expect. So the game lodge, you expect to see a game in, whereas the nature lodge, on the other hand, you would expect to be in an area where you are surrounded, once again, by nature, which is obviously away from your immediate garden. You can't be in your immediate garden and think that you are actually in a nature lodge. So it has to be away from all human settlements, whereby it's in a terrain and an area like that. As mentioned, within the NIST, we have changed it to venues, and we have six different categories within six different subcategories within the venue. We have done this to ensure that we differentiate what each subcategory requires. So within your hotel conference, you would likely find this within your hotel space, your hotel amenities. So once again, the criteria for the hotel will only apply to the public areas within this area. So once again, a hotel, the expectation is that it has to at least have a minimum of 10 rooms. And there has to be, if one would want to qualify for a conference venue, one would have to have a meeting facility to be able to accommodate at least about 50 pets within that area. And then also what we call the conference venue. The conference venue is dedicated specifically for meetings and special to medium-sized events. And there has to be dedicated meeting rooms whereby people are able to use those facilities. We also have your convention as well as the exhibition, which the expectation there is that it has to be a large conference venue, and it has to typically include different venues for different events, such as your exhibition, your auditorium, your conference, your boardrooms, etc. We also have within this category an event venue, an indoor or outdoor multi-purpose facility that is designed to hold events such as your sporting events, your concerts, or any religious concerts that one might require the event. And then we also have a historical venue. This one, as the name states, it has a heritage value or a historical venue. So we look at places like your gallery, your picture hall, your museum. So that would be the type of category, which the type of that category in which the what you call the historical venue which you fall under. Lastly, within the venue space, we also have a function venue, which is a space for smaller venues or special special events. Gerald indicated earlier that there are requirements that we look at in terms of our criteria. In the past, we have looked at minimum entry requirements, which we found that when we reviewed our criteria was that there was a lot of duplication and there was a lot of misunderstanding. Therefore, it was important for us to ensure that the criteria is understood by our assessors and that it is applied correctly to ensure that there is no duplication. Therefore, we have changed the minimum entry requirements to be core requirements. We look at qualitative as well as quantitative. So the core requirements look largely at your quantitative criteria to ensure that if you have, let's say for instance, the expectation for a 3-star or a 4-star hotel is that you have to have a cave, so that is a qualitative. You either have it or you don't have it. The qualitative aspect looks at the quality thereof, which the assessor would obviously reduce if this kind of thing would look at. So this is just an extract of what our criteria on the slide looks at. As you will see on the far right, it will indicate to your 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, up to 5-star. And then this extract, we've taken it from your hotel, your formal hotel accommodation, which is your formal hotel as well as your apartment hotel. So anything that is taken in terms of what is requirement, it has to be within all those subcategories. However, there are differences in terms of 3-star, 4-star, etc. So you might find that what is applicable to a 2-star will not necessarily be applicable to a 3-star, or what will be applicable to all stars, other levels will not be applicable. So as I said, within that, we just decided to show you an extract of what the criteria in terms of core requirements require. And then as you may know that our grading levels start from 1 up to 5 stars. We look at different areas in terms of our criteria. There is a system that we obviously use to ensure that when an assessor goes to do the physical assessment, there is a checklist which they have to tick, and it is weighted onto the system. So let's say, for instance, if one has a scoring between a 30 and a 43, they qualify for a 1-star. So it will be an acceptable level standard. Whereas if it is a 2-star, the scoring has to be between a 44% as well as 57%, and we look at it as a good acceptable 2-star. And then the middle one, obviously, is the 3-star, which would look at least a scoring between 58% as well as 73%. And then the 4-star, it has to be within 70%. The scoring would be expected to be between 74% as well as 77%. It is a system-generated exercise, so an assessor cannot really manipulate it to try and get a property to qualify for a star which they do not qualify for. So that is why it's important for us to ensure that the different levels of star rating fall within those star levels. And then lastly, it would be the 5-star, which is between 88% up to 100%, and it's really to be the 5-star. As indicated earlier, within when we reviewed our criteria, we introduced a premium which we look at hotels that have that would have an outstanding scoring. However, they also have to have an above 95% type of scoring. So as I indicated earlier, that we look at certain things that establishment would have achieved for us to actually approve it as a premium. We need to ensure that there is nothing such as your grace or dispensation that your hotel intent that is our spending is to ensure that it is on par in terms of our requirements.
Thanks, Knox. So, Chair and Honourable Members, we revised, as the team has said, our grading standards from about 2017 through to the end of last year, and we received ministerial approval in November of last year to introduce the new standards into the system, and we chose the 1st of April this year to effect that change and that introduction. It just allowed us some time to update our systems and make sure that we also spoken to our members and they knew what the new criteria would be as, so they're ready for the change. And why I'm giving this context is part of the addition to the system that previously was not in our grading system was a concept called accolades. And we've borrowed this from a number of other entities that do grading work around the globe. And the purpose behind accolades was the global traveling or the global tourist is becoming a lot more demanding and a lot more discerning. So they want to be able to book an accommodation establishment that speaks to their specific needs. And often by giving them a choice of, let's say, 4-star hotels, they don't necessarily know the specific things that hotel or those hotels are doing that speak to their needs. So we've introduced something called accolades, and we call it a badge of recognition. We have introduced, from 1st April, 17 accolades. And these accolades vary from things like identifying properties that are wedding venues. It could be properties that encourage family travel and specifically cater for families. It could be things like pet friendly. It's a growing trend, believe it or not, people are traveling more with their pets. We've got things like cycling. We've got things like 4x4 and adventure and those kind of things. And what we've done is created a set of icons which we've tried to align to the normal road signage. As an indicator that particular property meets this accolade requirement. Each of these accolades have got a certain number of criteria. So by way of example, if a particular property wanted to be listed as a family-friendly accommodation, irrespective of the category that it's graded, it could be a 1-star B&B, it could be a 5-star hotel, but if it wants to be allocated this accolade for family-friendly, it would need to have a safe and secure area where the kiddies can play, like a play area. It would need to offer services like a nanny service. It would need to have cots available and high chairs available. We've required them to have a kiddies menu in addition to their standard menu. And they need to have a television channel that is specifically geared to the kids. So what and then the other one is either interlinking rooms or a family room where they can accommodate obviously more than two people. So what we've tried to do is create an expectation using this accolade system that appeals specifically to people who have those needs. We have 17 of them. They're available and we can share them with the committee, but we thought it's important just to land the concept here. The one accolade that we have introduced that is a lot more in-depth is an accolade for responsible tourism. Now, we've seen both environmental challenges, the water shortages here in the Cape, and others that have affected the way in which we do business. And there is an existing South African National Standard, the South African National Standard 1162, that clearly defines what the most appropriate responsible tourism business practices are. And in the review process, what we did is took those different criteria, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's 40 odd of them, and we broke them up into what is really easy to apply, what is slightly more difficult, and the stuff that is really, you have to be absolutely committed to responsible tourism practices in order to comply with those. And we kept the relatively easy thing in our criteria for the responsible tourism accolade. Now these, Chair and Honourable Members, focuses on things like, are you procuring from the local market? Are you employing from the community that you are located in? Have you got water management and waste management and energy management techniques and monitoring? Have you got a policy around sustainability? And the goal behind this particular accolade is to recognise properties and owners who are trying to be more sustainable, and to encourage obviously more of them to do the same. So it's being very well received and being utilized well today. In addition to our normal grading criteria, which have the different categories which Knox has now been through, we also have an accreditation for Universal Accessibility Accreditation. And that has an opportunity to product to identify, or rather to meet specific criteria in their properties that speak to the requirements for people who have either communicative challenges, people who have visual impairments, and people who have mobility impairments. And Chair, in this case, it's not just people in wheelchairs, it's the elderly, it's potentially people, women who are pregnant, but general people who have mobility challenges. And what we've done in our system is the ability to have different levels of achievement in those particular areas of commitment. We have got a high prevalence of mobility grading and not as much a high prevalence of communicative and visual. But one thing that the team is working on, and we've had a commitment from our assessors, is to try and grow the number of properties that have this universal accessibility criteria or accreditation, because we want to be known as a destination that welcomes people who have got, you know, disabilities and is catering for all types of tourists. In addition to achieving that accreditation, there's a separate little plaque that goes with that, which you can then display as a property underneath the normal grading plaque that you would have. And we've just given you an example of it. What I've included here is just to give members an idea of the kind of structure that we operate in at head office. What I've also done, Chair and Honourable Members, is to indicate to you on this slide which of those functions are specifically for quality assurance and which of those functions are actually South African tourism functions. With the integration of the grading process and the grading system into South African tourism, I've taken on responsibilities in my role which are more driven by the South African tourism mandate as opposed to just the grading mandate, and I thought it was important to give members an idea of the different elements that we operate in and are participating from an SA tourism perspective. I'm going to ask Nelly to take you through the next couple of slides because it speaks to her team, the operations team or the assessment team, as well as the assessors, and gives the members an idea of where they are located and how they operate across the country in the different provinces.
Honourable members, so the majority of our graded establishments are located within KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, as well as Gauteng. So we felt it pertinent that we needed to have a member of staff residing within those respective provinces to actually drive tourism development and growth with the provincial counterparts. So I've got a provincial quality assurance specialist who resides in East London, and she also oversees the Northern Cape. The other provincial quality assurance specialist resides in Gauteng, and he also oversees Northwest. I've got one PQAS in KZN, and they also oversee Free State. And I've got a provincial quality assurance specialist in Bulukwane, and she oversees Mpumalanga. Because of the vast properties within the Western province, I've got two provincial quality assurance specialists located in Cape Town, and they oversee the East, West, North, and so forth. In terms of the demographics where our accredited grading assessors are concerned, they reside, or they are within the province of residence, but they are not limited to conducting physical assessments within those respective provinces. So they have the free will to conduct physical assessments in other provinces, just so that we do not restrict their income, just also to also aid the turnaround time in terms of ensuring that our members are accredited timely. So we have given you the provincial spread of these assessors. And one small win for us is in the small dots, such as your Northern Cape, as well as Northwest and Free State, we previously did not have assessors. But we've ensured now that we have assessors who can attend to the grading of tourism products as and when required as such. Assessors are not full-time staff, they're not permanent staff. They are contracted to us through a service provider agreement, which is for 3 years. It also governs their conduct and the operating processes in ensuring that it is aligned with our standard operating procedures as well as our organizational objectives. The sales targets, because they are given targets the minute that we take them on. If we're a new assessor, you are required to at least within the year ensure that you have acquired 24 products. For all the assessors, they work on whatever portfolio they have built to date. They need to ensure 95% retention of their portfolio, as well as bring certain new products as per our organizational target for that fiscal year. They are paid on commission only. So if they have assessed properties within that particular month, they get paid as per the commission sliding scale. So if an assessor has properties that are between 0 and 100, and the grading fee which is charged the product, the assessor then can then invoice us 50% of that grading fee. The rest then oversee TGCSA operational costs and keeping the lights on and so forth. If they've got over 100 properties within their portfolio, they get paid 55%, over 200 is 50%, and over 3 55%. We have put a cap on 420 because we don't think it's possible for any assessor, no matter how strong their administrative assistance is, to have and take care of partnerships, over 420 partnerships as such. In terms of training and recruiting, we recruit assessors as and when the need arises. We currently have 62 assessors which are located across the country. We require that their qualifications are hospitality driven. They have attention to detail. They've traveled themselves. They've got quality assurance in terms of experience or qualification. And being a service provider, there are certain tools that they will need to ensure that they provide for themselves in order to meet the deliverables as per the service provider agreement. They undergo an accreditation training, which is conducted in-house by CIBO, one of NOC's team members, and we require that they obtain at least 80% of this accreditation training, or failing which, we do not sign them on. And thereafter, we do what we, every time we have annual assessor conferences, which we have every year, we do refresher courses on the modules which we currently have, your likes of sales and negotiations, because they need to be in an empowering position in terms of new applicants or businesses that are operating, in providing guidance, in providing improvement, in ensuring that the businesses are operating at optimum level as such. All of this is overseen by the provincial quality assurance specialists, which are located across the provinces. We do have what we call mid-year performance reviews, in which then we see whether what the assessors are performing is in line with the target that they were given when we signed them on. In cases where we feel that performance is not aligned, we obviously give them an opportunity for remedial, and if they still don't meet targets, we terminate their contract after obviously internal interventions which have taken place. It goes without saying that where there's humans, there's error. We have had a few assessors who are not performing as per the code of conduct. We obviously follow the dispute resolution process, which we stipulated on the service provider agreement. Since my tenure with the Tourism Greening Council, I've only had two assessors which I've had to let go because they misconduct as such. I'll hand over now to Genevieve, who will take us through illegal advertising.
Thank you, everyone. Honourable members, Honourable Chair, I hope by the end of my presentation you would have some insight and intricate detail in terms of what the Quality Protection Team stands for, what we assist the Grading Council with, and what we live by in terms of our responsibilities. We're a very small team. We're a team of 3 individuals. Ideally, this team looks after our complaints, our usage of star insignia, as well as our plaque production and distribution. I would say that the Quality Protection Team is a department or a division that complements my colleagues' department very well. You've heard from them the strict, stringent rules that they apply in terms of the grading, the assessing, the training, but then there's the downside to it, where when you get a graded member and they don't renew their membership, they start utilizing that star that was allocated to them, and they still publish that, they advertise it. In our world, that's referred to as illegal advertising. As a team, we try and put hold or try and grab hold of the situation through various measures, and I'm going to take you through those measures today. So as you know, that the grading membership is a membership that's valid for 1 year. So when a member gets graded, they are awarded a plaque. Your plaque then gets delivered to you within 60 days of your grading membership. Subsequently, we've improved this SLA turnaround time, and we've reduced that to 30-day turnaround time in terms of receiving your plaque. So my colleague Daryl alluded to it in terms of just discussing the universal accessibility plaque. That plaque, together with your star insignia plaque, is given to you in one package. If the plaque is outdated by an establishment, what we then do is we send our courier company out with an instruction, which is to provide us with the old plaque in order to get your new plaque. So you cannot get a new plaque if you don't provide the courier company with your old plaque. If nothing changes for cost-effective and cost-saving reasons, we keep the plaque as standard. If you have applied within the same category and within the same star grading, you keep the plaque. The only thing that will change thereafter is your digital certificate. Your digital certificate usually gets disseminated within 7 days of you being graded. And what we generally try and do is we try and encourage establishment owners to utilize both the plaque as well as the certificate. In case you ever have to wonder how do you identify whether the plaque is a legitimate plaque, on the bottom right-hand corner of your plaque, there will be a serial number that is displayed on that bottom right-hand corner of your plaque. I think it's on slide number 38. So if you see there's a serial number at the bottom, that serial number is directly tied to your TGCSA membership. So usually what happens is when we have somebody that calls us in and says, I have a hunch that this establishment is advertising their group as illegally advertising, we immediately run a search on our database of 5,300 clients to see whether this establishment has been graded. Sometimes, because it's human error, you would have odd few establishments that may forget about renewing their membership. But that's where we try and control the communication a bit more effectively and a bit better. So what we then do is when we try and communicate this to our clients of the illegal advertising and the illegal usage, we communicate it to them on 3 stages of email. So because we caught between a rock and a hard place, we want to enforce authority, but we also have to be cognizant of the fact that these are our members. And the main aim of the game is to try and get them back into our subscription base. So ultimately what we do is the first letter that gets disseminated to the establishment that's illegally advertising highlights the fact that they are illegally advertising. We obtain a whole host of evidence that would be, usually they would advertise it on TripAdvisor, Booking.com, their star grading. We would obtain screen grabs of that illegal advertising and send them a letter. In this letter, it's very positive reinforcement. The first letter is along the lines of, you may have forgotten to renew your grading subscription, not to worry, somebody can assist you with it. And in that letter response that we send to them, we take this opportunity to educate them about the funding opportunities, because that is the golden ticket to get them back onto our book, is to educate them as much as possible in terms of what are the due diligence requirements of funding, how do we get them back onto our books, and ultimately, if they are interested, we send this back to the assessor. So in our loop of communication, as much as we're trying to curb our illegal usage, we're also trying to promote our conversion rate. So you will see on one of the slides that at this point in time, we actually do have a high conversion rate. As much as it's about quality that we're trying to enforce, and we're trying not to push the quantity. Yes, you can push, you can reduce all of the amount of illegal advertising tickets that are out there, but ultimately we want to get them back onto our books. To bring you into light, for the month of August, we had an 80% conversion rate. Now, in case you're wondering, the illegal advertising side of the business fits in very integrally into the Tourism Act 3 of 2014, which ultimately I think Daryl has gone through extensive detail on it. But just to go over a few things in terms of how we enforce the prosecution of illegal advertising. So if you ignore the first mail, the second email that goes out to you, but the third mail is very much of a consequential email that's sent to you in terms of what is the fine possibilities, what is the imprisonment possibilities. It is prescribed in the Act that the prescribed insignia can only be utilized by a graded establishment. If you are not graded and you decide to use the insignia, if you've never been graded before and you decide to use the insignia, it is considered as illegal advertising and we can actually pursue in terms of legal prosecution. Our challenges at this point in time, I would say, like any division, as much as we're trying to look at a huge high conversion rate in terms of trying to get our subscribers back onto our books, it doesn't hold a lot of clout. Our letters, because of the fact that grading is not something that's voluntary in South Africa. Because of the fact that it's not voluntary, because of the fact that it is voluntarily based, you have a lot of establishments that will advertise themselves on your Expedia, your bookings.com as a 4-star or a 3-star. And this takes a lot of research from our team in terms of identifying, have they ever been graded before? Can we get them graded? And if not, how do we remove them from our books immediately? What support, which is essential, I would say, to take the quality protection team to the next level, is we would need a higher authoritative support from the SNPS. It's difficult when you call establishments and you say, I need my flock back, and they just giggle on the phone. And that is the difficult part that we are in at this point in time, is trying to actually crack down on those establishments that are not graded. Ultimately, by doing so, we believe and we truly have seen the stats in terms of it has its forms of increasing consumer confidence, because your consumers are aware in terms of what are they booking. We have other forms in terms of reviews and online platforms that we're trying to agree upon in terms of MOUs such as Expedia. Now, often what happens in South Africa is you always get consumers that go on to your bookings.com, your Expedia, your TripAdvisors, and you see the yellow bubbles on the top, the 4 or the 5 yellow bubbles, and people automatically just assume that that is the star grading. That is not the TGCSA star grading. Those are consumers' reviews. And often what happens in South Africa, our consumers are getting miscued in terms of what is TGCSA graded versus what is consumer reviews in the country. So what we're trying to do is we are working with the likes of Expedia, your bookings.com, your travel ground, in terms of putting or enforcing MOUs in place whereby once you are able to search for a property, province-specific, you would then be able to filter it according to your TGCSA star allocation. So simply put, if you had to research for an accommodation in a specific province, the actual TGCSA stars would appear next to that establishment name. That is how you would know whether a property is graded or not. Alternatively, what you can do is that the TGCSA website is available. It's an open domain, a public site, whereby if you just type in the establishment name, you would be able to view whether they are graded or not graded. Likewise, our complaints and our reporting process is very simple, very easy to use. It's just a matter of giving us a call. Our feedback line is open from Monday to Friday between 8:30 and 4:30. This feedback team will take your calls, report your illegal advertising concerns or your complaints, investigate it, and rightfully so, we rope in the assessors as well as the PQASs of the province, and in extreme cases, Nelly and Daryl will get involved as well. Thank you all for your time. I hope that we've given you some insight into the various divisions, and specifically my division. And I thank you in advance for your assistance that you are going to render to us in terms of making it a better and a more exciting opportunity for us all. And rightfully so, we just want to put the stars in the right places. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to wrap up now. What we have also included in the presentation is just some complimentary services and complimentary benefits that are provided to our members. I'm hoping, Petra, that many of the committee members are going to be in Pretoria on Saturday. We have the National Vilizela Award taking place, so I'm hoping to see many of the committee there. This is our mechanism. It's owned by the Minister of South African Tourism, executed, but it's our mechanism to reward people who deliver service excellence. It takes place in all the provinces, typically during September, with the National Award usually happening towards the end of October, beginning of November, and it's an annual awards program. It's been running now for 7 years and is becoming and growing in its stature, and I think brand relevant, and people in the industry are really looking to Vilizela as an achievement. So we're very proud of the Vilizela Tourism Awards. There were a couple of questions also that specifically pertain to how do we assist graded establishments, and specifically the small to medium enterprises, and also those small to medium enterprises located in the slightly more rural parts of the country. And within Nox's team, she has a very small team who are responsible for a concept called speed marketing. Chair, honourable members, typically what this is, it's like speed dating, with speed dating. But we get products, only graded establishments in the area, together with the different providers. So it could be attractions, it could be experiences, and in many cases, tour operators in a specific region. And we allow them the opportunity to network amongst each other, create packages which then they can on-sell to relevant travellers, and we also bring in tour operators, the national tour operators, into these speed marketing opportunities, which gives these SMEs both learning opportunities, so they understand the processes of packaging, of pricing. It also helps them network and build bigger networks so that they're able to market themselves better, and it's at a no cost to them as well as a business as part of the benefits we offer here from being a graded establishment. We also have, I think members might be familiar with the Welcome campaign. It was very effective in the 2010 era with the Soccer World Cup. My team also oversee the implementation of the Welcome campaign. It's linked very closely to the We Do Tourism movement. But in essence, what is inside the Welcome toolkit is different information that relates to our inbound markets. We then go out and we work with the trade, but we also work with other government entities. We work with the Department of Home Affairs at the borders, we work with South African Revenue Services and customs people at the borders, we work with South African Police Services and others, and the entire process here is about training and ensuring that they understand the importance of being hospitable, of being a welcoming South African, and how that contributes to the positioning of South Africa as a destination. As I said, we do that quite extensively. Nox's team also have recently engaged with the International Hotel School, and we've signed an MOU with them, which is going to allow us to provide training, online training, in the form of front office and housekeeping, guest services, waiter training, to our members, which they can actually do in their properties. So a lot of these smaller businesses are located in very vast areas, and for them to get to a central place to come and do training is often quite difficult. So what we've done is we've gone the digital route and now allowing them to do the training online. That will be finding its way to our website in the near future. The South African specialist is also something South African tourism uses quite extensively, both here and internationally. It's an online training program which allows people either who don't work in the sector, but also people who do work in the sector, to get a better understanding of what South Africa has on offer, and specifically each of the provinces. And why we encourage our members to use this is often guests who are traveling to, let's say, a property in Gauteng may very well be traveling to KZN or one of the other provinces. And if they ask members of staff, you know, what can I do, where can I go in these other provinces, having completed a qualification like SA Specialist gives them that information which they can then on-share to the guests. So we have a very good uptake, and there's about 1,000 people a month that are getting qualifications here globally on the SA Specialist platform. The last one before we end off on our performance is the Thompson Levy, the 1% Tourism Levy, which I'm sure members know is a voluntary process. It's run by the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. And obviously growing the revenue in this particular space is important to us because it limits the impact of the work that we do on the fiscus. We encourage as many of our members as possible to collect this voluntary levy. They're not paying for it, they're simply collecting it from the guests and passing it on to the TBTS labour distribution. But as I say, we partner very closely with them and encourage the collection of this levy widely. Then, Chair, the last one before I end off is what I've plotted here is just a performance trend. You'll be able to see from January 2008 to current how we're performing in terms of the number of graded establishments. It's unfortunately relatively cyclical, and the membership base is often affected by the economy and economic situation in the country. But I think what's positive to see is we are seeing growth in the number of graded establishments. And the number of graded rooms, which are two KPIs that we follow and track very closely. Chair, from our side, that's our download, our information download, and we look forward to the questions and engaging further. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Darrell, and all the colleagues who made the presentation. The Honourable Member on the extreme right, the colleague, is Honourable Khalifa. Who had apologized because of some logistical unforeseen circumstances which delayed him. So welcome, Honorable Khalifa. I don't know if you've got anything to say. Honorable De Freitas?
Questions?
Yeah, that's where we are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation, very detailed information. Just a few questions. I see that targets have been set annually for grading, and in the last few years these targets haven't been met. My question is, how are these targets established in the first place, and you know, why have they not been met? Are the targets perhaps unrealistic or something? So just talk a little more about that.
Yeah.
And then also, I'd be interested to hear, because I see in the BRRR report, I think it was last year, so I took down my notes. It does suggest that grading being free, and compulsory but free, and I think it was one of the recommendations from the previous committee in the last parliament. I stand to be corrected, I think that's where I thought I read it. We could just talk about that, because I think that would eliminate a lot of the problems. I'm also concerned about, quite honestly, the cost of the business. You know, we're talking about a very small one-person show. It's only a very, very small establishment in a township, for example, or a little dorky. You know, this kind of money, this is big money. And I'd like to hear more about that. If I was a one-person show in a township, the last thing I'd worry about is about grading. Because it's going to cost me money, and so I've got to stop, so what? So I'd like to like a little bit more about that. I see also in our stats that like 15% of the large hotel chains are actually officially graded. Is it really even working? And that's why I'm suggesting that we perhaps look at what the previous committee in the last parliament is saying, is that it's become free, compulsory, but you can say it's compulsory if it's free. So I'd be interested to hear a little more about that. Then my last point was the BRRR report 2016-17 said that. And then I think it's partially answered, because I see that there are relationships set up with the Northern Cape, for example, and so forth, with the Grading Council, but I think it was in the presentation where it's this kind of mutual support and so forth. And then, Chair, and I think that is all. Can you just double check? That's it.
Sure. That's a good bit.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to all the presenters. I've got just three questions. The first one is, what is the extent of the involvement and influence of CTOs on grading and the standards? So your community tourism organizations on the ground who are closely associated obviously to all the activity around the area. What is their influence on the star grading of filters and how you get your standards? The second question is, what are the advantages and disadvantages of hiring graders on a commission basis when they have to chase numbers? What are the advantages and disadvantages of hiring graders on a commission basis where they have to ultimately chase numbers to make good profit? The last one, obviously, and I think this is an obvious one which I was going to bring up, is around the cost of the grading. If I look at the notes here, in a study conducted by the council, 54% of the sample cited grading as being too expensive. 41% indicated that we had a good base before we needed the grading. But the key thing is that 64% of people say it is simply too expensive. Now I know that there are constraints, so I'm trying to see to what extent the council has stretched itself. Have you, for instance, considered giving free grading to establishments that are less than 3 years old, or for the first 3 years in which they start up? Has that been something that has been considered? Because I think that we're in a position at the moment where everything indicates that free grading simply must happen because it's too expensive. We need to grow that base of people who need work. We need to grow that base of people who are coming up the ranks, who have a small spot where they can start up some kind of business. But we also need to stretch ourselves. And if that means that the moment you start off by saying that for any establishment that starts out in its first 3 years, they must have simply free grading. Other establishments after that, based on their incentive package, have 90% discounts and others, I think you explained it. But at least then that progress in the right direction. But I think the option of this is a structural impediment, I think it's no longer possible. It's no longer possible to say that, unfortunately, there are costs involved and we can't move forward. I think even just from the pressure coming from the last term and this term, I think that's going to be the direction of things. Thanks.
Sure. Now, just on.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenters. So their presentation was the eye-opener. But Chairperson, there's something that I want to find out today. Do they have the system to outreach to rural areas to educate them? Because if you see, they always based in township or in the urban area. I want check about their system to and the other question is that 2016 to 2018 you failed your target. You didn't reach your target. You didn't meet what your target was. And then in 2019 to 2020 you reduced or you decreased your target. Why what caused you to decrease that? From where it's supposed to be. And the other question I'm worried about is the accommodation facilities, because they always focus on accommodation. What other avenues do you have to reach out from not accommodation to other scheme for the
Thanks, Mr. Dair. So, Ramakrit Maria.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I'm also joining my colleagues to welcome the presentation from the great team. Let me start by checking water, I think, is with drinking or with statue. On page, what is this? There are no numbers. On formal service accommodation. I see they say hotel. It must have a minimum of 10 rooms, but a small hotel must have approximately 80 rooms. So I don't know, because I thought the hotel is bigger than the small hotel, but they were bigger because we are new in this area. Fellow Jefferson, I want to, because it's the first time we are meeting the team, not to meet their leader. We are using, but others will be their name. The main focus of this committee in this sixth parliament is villages, townships, and small towns. That's the main focus. We are not saying we must abandon the big cities. We are saying maintain the standard, maintain whatever you're doing. At the same time, more focus will be on where there's nothing. So, my proposal is this. When coming to grading cost, let us reward those who are investing in the villages by means of giving them doing grading free and in the township. So townships and villages, you grade them for free, and then when come to small towns, you can save 50%. That's my proposal, so that you encourage people to go where the most the poverty is beating people the most. Because in the rural, in the villages, you're not going to make a lot of money. There are less people with income in the poverty. So if at the same time that person needs to pay his 3,000 or more per month, per year, something else. But if you can encourage them, please go try, do business there, and then you're not going to pay the grading, whatever. Maybe they pay only joining fee, then we see how, if we can manage to encourage them to invest in the rural areas where our people are suffering the most. And my last input, Chairperson, is on the certificates that have expired. Because some they do these gradings, their names are up there, the 5 grades, they are whatever, but they just go even beyond. When you look at the certificate, it's expired. So what are you? What are you doing to that kind of business? So that's another indication to say people may not be affording, but others are just a naughty. Yeah, it can be naughtiness or an affordability. So, but my question there is mainly, what are you doing about people who are affording? Thank you very much.
Sure, that's me.
I think I've got only two questions here. The first one is that if someone has been graded and does not renew his grading the following year, how do you trace him or her? Then if you did catch him, what do you do with that? The other thing is that I'm from the villages.
But I see that you mostly based in cities. How do you go out to the villages and teach those people about the importance of the training? Thank you.
Sure. Gumba Gumba.
Thank you. Thank you, Chen. I have only a few questions. My first question is about the situation whereby you find that the facility is untradeable, you know, due to the fact that it does not meet the necessary requirements. Does the assessor make a follow-up to ensure that that establishment is credible? Number two, in terms of after awarding the staff to the establishment, does the department send an assessor random this maybe quarterly? Because I think your grading lasts for a year. After a year, it must be annually renewed and also go back and check whether the standards are still at the same place. I want to find out if you send quarterly, maybe assessors randomly to go and check if the standards are still remaining at the same status quo which they found at first instance. Number four, I will ask a question about the backpackers. How do you measure the grading of the backpackers? Because it should be very difficult to check the quality of backpackers versus the situation of backpackers themselves in tourism. The other one is about the new technology. I would wish chair of the committee to see our grading council improving their requirements for grading, particularly to those 4 to 5 stars, whereby you find that they include the Wi-Fi as one of the requirements, because it is actually embarrassing to find 5 stars not having Wi-Fi, which is something that people will expect to find in the establishment of 5 stars or 4 stars. The advertisement, I know, of all the graded establishments normally happens. There is a handbook that normally comes out from tourism authority that shows all the graded council, and which is normally annually amended as per the new graded establishment. That one I know you do, but it must maybe be on the website as well. But I think on the website is good. That one I will comment and say congratulations, I know you do that. But also I want to find out about do you link your department with the Department of Health, particularly the local municipalities which are surrounding the establishments which are supposed to be graded with regards to the health certificate? Because you cannot be a 5-star or a 3-star or 4-star issue food when you are not qualified to do so according to the municipality. The standards and the inspection of the food to find that people are in danger and food poisoning can take place. So, you know, I know I may sound not to be relevant to grading council, but I think quality assurance goes all the way, even food is part of it. So that's why I'm asking the question to say, do you also link or book yourself, or if it's not happening, maybe can you consider doing that to ensure that your standards of grading go hand in hand with the quality of food and the qualification of the service provider to sell food with the health certificate, that is also annually reviewed. I would also like to find about the do you also get interested in finding whether people are being overcharged sales versus pricing? Because you find that some of the establishments, they charge the price which is very higher, but lie to the organization that because they are two stars, they are paying so much, and therefore their rates which they are supposed to pay should be lower. When you investigate, you find that they are charging more than even the stars which they are supposed to, they are already having given to. So those are the questions. The grading of the tour operating companies, they are also under tourism. Do we grade these vehicles that are taking tourists from grade point A to point B, or only the fixed assets that are being graded for tourism? Because it is important, because it's a package. It's not only about sleeping on the white sheet or between two sheets, but it's also about the tourism comfort that goes with it. So tourism authority maybe should expand and look at such. Thank you very much.
Oh, one thing. Your name is a new name.
Juma?
One thing.
Thank you, Babu.
The rugby guy, the one who scored the track.
Yeah. So thank you very much. Only maybe two questions and two comments. My first question to you is, let me also welcome the presentation. It's around, I think from page 24. The grading levels. Also asked, you have some runoffs that is presented. We have a program that is flexible to accommodate the upcoming businesses in the hospitality industry. That goes to my honorable Mutesa. But might as well say give it free. But do you have a program that is meant to sensitize or conscientize the upcoming businesses on the importance of trading and having the staff? If you could really pilot them to say, let's have an outreach, just to sensitize the importance of trading your business and also getting the staff the benefits of that. That would be my question. Then the second question is, after 25 years of democracy, are you happy with the focus on the growth of businesses, especially in this industry? When it comes to your B&Bs, your guest houses, that you are to be empowered to be full-fledged, hotels. That's the question. And I'm happy, this one is just a comment, I'm happy that there was a mention of a provision for small dolphins. I did get something like that. But this comment from my fellow councillor, Uma Mukuma, looking at the environment around the establishment itself, you look at the spillages that are, sewer spillages that are surrounding some establishments, which is not really the fault of that establishment. I think, without really penalizing them, but if an assessor goes to assess an establishment, you also look around maybe a certain, you know, distance from the establishment so as to sensitize that particular local municipality. To say, within this establishment, please take note that these villages that were also picked up so that the police municipality does not relax as well without really penalizing the establishment itself. The last comment is Umama from the Trading Council. I checked, just forget the name. You had a very good calculated English when it comes to the assessors who committed some misconduct. And hope in future you will keep it simple and straightforward on what you mean about this misconduct and elaborate more when it comes to possible misconduct, especially when a due process has been followed through up to the latter, so that such mistakes are not, you know, committed again by others. That's all.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair. The only comment I have, Chairperson, is around the observation that the grading directorate, if I may put it that way, has challenges in enforcing compliance. But what I've picked up is from the lady who is responsible for compliance and enforcement, is that you are saying when people are using the stars, or you are left toothless in ensuring that you enforce compliance. Now that tells me, Chairperson, that perhaps there is there are challenges or there are problems with our own laws and regulations as a country, which means that we as a portfolio committee are directly responsible for this, because what we should be doing is giving the grading council teeth to bite, so that when compliance is not adhered to, there is some level of them enforcing the legislation that warrants grading. Perhaps after this, Chairperson, it would be for us to sit down in the portfolio committee and see where are the loopholes in terms of strengthening and enabling compliance with the grading plans and all this. Then the second one is that the last time it was government was encouraged to use only graded establishments, so that grading can be rolled out in a way that would like it to happen. Because grading speaks to visitor experience, Chairperson, you know. And unfortunately, visitor experience is the one that people get to measure our establishment based on their experiences in an establishment, in a room, or in a facility. So perhaps we can get a briefing, a DDG, and the chief director there responsible for grading to say, how far have you worked with government and treasury to ensure that there is regulation and enforcement of the regulation for government to use only graded establishments? And if they can't use graded establishment, what what then becomes the reason for them not to opt to use graded establishments, you know? And then perhaps give us a brief on that drive, on how or how far has government worked towards using only graded establishments. And then the other question that I have is that on the grading system, the global benchmarking, well, it's just my observation that I see you are benchmarking with so many countries. It's not a concern, but it's just something that intrigued me to say, why do you not actually even put Dubai there as a benchmark? Because Dubai has been, in the last 5 to 10 years, has been a tourist destination of so many South Africans, you know, and people around the world, you know, who visit Dubai, you know. Perhaps why would you not put it in the establishment so that you benchmark and see what pulls people to Dubai and their what you call the hotel stays in that area, so that we can learn and see how best can we also improve our own standards. And then the last question is around the boutique hotel. I see you indicated that a hotel must have 10 rooms, a small hotel about 80 rooms. But then I want to understand, besides the issue of a distinct furniture or decoration of each room, how many rooms must a boutique establishment have, you know, to qualify in that criteria? That's my question.
Okay, Honorable Kumba.
Yes, there's one point. It's a very small point. It's about food, but it's not... It's about food, but not about the same question. Does the Grading Council also consider whether, when they give the staff, whether you serve the continental breakfast or the English breakfast, because sometimes they would want to see the type of breakfast you are selling. So do they make a difference in terms of star grading? Thank you.
All right. I was looking for the meaning of boutique. Yes, I'm sure he was a business or an establishment that is small and sophisticated or fashionable. We don't know who gave this definition to the chief, but it's in Honyo, Google. The Honorable Crumbop has just joined us. You are welcome, Honorable Member. He's from the People's Province of KwaZulu-Natal, representing the Democratic Alliance. Do you want to say something, Honorable Kamu?
No, sir, I won't disrespect the meeting by saying something that might already be covered. I'm sorry I'm late. I did give you prior
yes.
notice, but I respect the interest that you made.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Honorable Kamu. Now, Councillor, if we take Khao Dang and put it at some rooms at South Ransa, I'm sure you will degrade that. Because it smells bad. And it's dirty. Now, that's the city setup, right? If we go to a village, some of us grew up in mud houses, right? Because there were no tiles, carpets, and so on. Khao Dang was used and is being used on the floor. So you smell the freshness of the Khao Dang. Right? And for renovation purposes, they use mud, fresh up to for maintenance. Now, in a village, if we want tourists to go and experience the life of villagers who live in poverty, therefore using tourism to uplift them out of poverty, right? We may reach a situation where this tourist, particularly foreign tourists, may have to go and experience the smell of a cow dung, but in a house, including the mud that is fresh that is being used to do maintenance on the house, right? Linked to that, they may have to experience that village without sanitation. So it's an experience. You have a young man who grew up in Europe. This thing of sanitation absence, he doesn't know anything about, so he wants to experience it practically in a village. Right? So it's cow dung, it's a mud, it's sanitation where they use kids' toilet, they are drunk. Because in some areas it's forest and other things. Right? And if we want to deal with poverty and we want people to experience that, it means they will be coming there as tourists. And we may want to also have them experiencing how we slaughter a goat and why we slaughter it in a particular way from a cultural, traditional perspective. So they may want to experience that as part of rituals or whatever. If we have a feast or we slaughter a beast, they may want to come and experience that. That is a village. And then at night there will be no electricity. So what we use for lighting there in the village, I don't know what you call it in Sikosa, but it's a molopita. It's a small tin where you put in paraffin.
Finger food.
We call it
Fenya
food. Fenya food. What is it in Inuit? Well, they don't have it in London, that's why there's no. So you use that small tin with paraffin for lighting, right? And then for cooking, there in the village they'll be using a dried cow dung. Remember, there's the wet one in the house. Now outside is a dried one. Now that's for cooking. All those things, most of them are not smelling nice. And they don't look nice. Some of us grew up in those conditions. You go to church and with a suit, it's very cold, it's winter, you have to sit next to the fire there. And the fire is made out of not wood, it's cow dung. So the smell gets into your clothes. And you go to church, respectable men or women, church. Nobody complains because they are used to the smell in the village, right? If we were to make tourists experience that type of life in a village, how do you grade it? Do you have that category? Because I can tell you now, the only people who want to experience that type of life, and I think to push tourism, we may want to advise people in the villages for tourists to experience how they live there. So that category is not in the presentation. And the truth is that in South Africa there are areas where people still live like that in South Africa. Others may be using wood, right, to make fires. But the fact of the matter is that there are people who live in those situations and will want tourists to visit them and to experience, so that at night they tell them about the stars, the name of the stars and how they relate with the stars and the moon, right, how they relate to all those things. They sit around the fire, but it's thinking, it's not smelling nice. They're uncomfortable, they're tourists, but the local people are not uncomfortable, right? The young girls and boys are dancing in song, poetry, and so on. And then you enjoy the traditional food. So it's a good tourism setup there. But it's in a village. All these things that I'm talking about, infrastructure, is not there. And the tourists must go there overnight, two nights, three nights, to experience the life. Which style do we give them, these people, in the village, or their dialect?
Ungradable.
But if they attract more tourists, and how do we tell people about that situation, who are tourists, and say you can experience this in South Africa? And in South Africa you'll find it in this part of KZN or in Mpumalanga and so on. And we train some young people there on how to bring this tourist as they arrive there. And great. So, but it's taking place. What do we do with it? Should we say you change to become urban now? Or must we maintain that? Because future generations will not know that we used to live like that in South Africa. That's the first thing I wanted to say, which is a bit difficult for me, but I think we must deal with it. The second thing is these homestays. I don't know if you are creating them. I've not seen in the presentation. The homestays. How do we deal with that? The department is promoting homestays there, and we are supporting them, homestays. What do we do with the grading in as far as the homestays are concerned? Three, there is a bill which is delaying Darrell to come. Maybe that bill must come so that we buy the bullet once and for all and deal with the consequences. Because it has been threatening to come, and it doesn't come. So that bill must come. Let's look at it. Table it in the house. We'll table it. Let's deal with the bill. Because situations change so quickly, like a lightning, that you will forever be consulting and assessing the situation. So let the bill come so that we can deal with it. The other matter is about the number of establishments that are exiting. I saw it somewhere, but I didn't see it in detail. Not only the number. Where are they? Are they village, rural, township, small town, or city? This one that is existing from the grading system arrangement. If I'm having an establishment in a village and I don't have disposable cash, the only thing I have is goats, cattle, and sheep. And I want to pay you every year the subscription. I want to give you a ship every year. Right? You say, I can pay you with a ship. What would you accept such forms of payment, or you just accept cash? And so on. And linked to the issue of transport, that Honorable Gumba Gumba was speaking about, there's donkey carts in the villages there. So when they take you into the village, we may put you on a donkey cart to get into the village. I would like to get your comment on that. Australia is okay, my sister. We thought that we will be done by now, all things being equal. So because of circumstances beyond our control and our means, you have to leave the meeting. She did bring that to my attention. She has got other present engagements elsewhere. Grading, do you also consider this variable of security? Security, parking, those things. If we have got 5,200 graded, what is the approximate number of ungraded ones? Because that becomes our potential. So the challenge will be, if we have more of the same number, ungraded establishments, what do we do to make sure that they become graded establishments? I know you spoke about, I don't know if I saw a caravan park.
Yeah.
Is there?
Yeah.
It's a moving target. So I don't know, do you grade the place itself where you put caravans or the caravan? the place, but people sleep in a caravan. Okay. But we sleep in a caravan when we are there. So in the hotels you grade the rooms. Okay. You may want to look at that particular matter. But I think, they have told you, Honorable Mocheka, our focus as a committee, we are not excluding the cities, but they are more advanced now. So the cities are like the first world in tourism. The villages, the townships are the third world of tourism. So our focus is on the third world. As the committee, we would want to see us going to the villages and the townships and the small dorpies, the small towns, which is our third world. Our first world is your Cape Towns, Table Bay, San International, San City, your southern towns, and so on. So we would want to go to the village so that people can visit the village and experience life there. I don't know, I know you are just doing the grading, so you don't do establishment yourself. But I just thought you must be aware that that is our approach as a committee. Okay, over to you now.
Thank you.
Carol?
Thank you, Chair, very much. I think
CQA is home. Everything is quality. Chief quality assurance officer.
Yeah.
Then you've got national quality assessment manager. Then you've got quality assurance and development manager. Then you've got quality protection manager.
Yes.
So what you protect is quality. I like this quality. What do you think? Okay, let's hear what you say about cow dung.
Thank you, Chair, very much. I think perhaps let me ask the management team if they'd like to pick up on some of them,
okay.
And then I'll round up at the end. With,
no problem, management.
A number of questions have come up with regards to ensuring properties that are not gradable, if I can put it like that, within the rural areas. I think one of the questions came from you, Honorable Peter. So one of the projects that I have for this year is ensuring that we look at such facilities and that would include also homestays. We currently have a tender that's out for grading of such facilities to ensure that we encourage them to look at formal grading. So it would be properties that do not necessarily qualify to the formal grading structure. What we have done in terms of developing criteria is to look at your at the guest accommodation category. Remember, in my presentation, I mentioned that within that category we have your bed and breakfast, which is your basic establishment that one would share with the host. And we also have a guest accommodation, and lastly we have the country house accommodation as the category. So what we've done with the, we call it BQV, the basic quality verification, this is the tender that we want to get out to ensure that properties that do not necessarily qualify, and looking at such properties such as homestays, and also properties within the rural areas that would live in a setup whereby there's still, you know, your cow dung and that type of setup. So we have that tender, which is closing sometime this month. We're trying to get a project, a service provider that will be able to manage the project on our behalf we're looking at piloting it in the Eastern Cape, and looking at the success thereof, we will then roll it out on other provinces. This project actually came as a result of the collaboration that we had with the Network Department of Tourism through the TIP MOU.
Okay.
Yes,
so Eastern Cape is because of the district model thing?
No.
Or it just felt like going to this?
No. So there were delays with regards to rolling out the project.
Okay.
We initially wanted it to be rolled out last year. However, there have been delays in terms of getting the service provider. The reason why we chose the Eastern Cape was that it was because of the centenary last year. That was the reason behind rolling it out in the Eastern Cape and trying to do the Eastern Cape as a pilot and then rolling it out in other provinces. But we do have Limpopo, for instance, that has a huge coverage in terms of home state. So we'll be rolling it out in other provinces following the success there of the pilot.
Peter, you must change that province name to Nelson Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
It will attract the huge numbers of I'm just saying it in passing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, instead of saying it is the east of the Cape. Mm-hmm. And then say Nelson Mandela province.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. Peter Zamoya, no more. Yeah. The next. For all you wanted to ask my sister?
Yes. With regards to the response,
okay.
Okay. My question is not expected to say my question, Chair, is not exactly, it's the same question, but not the content is not the same. What I'm saying is that there are some establishments in the maybe not townships, but in those areas that are very civilized, but uncredible, not meeting the standard, not even one star standard. That those are the ones I'm talking about. The one that the person is talking about, the one that we are in, what is the grading of the project that is being is in the next of our hearts. Our heart is about township and also rural areas. This one I'm talking about upmarket areas which are not credible due to the fact that they don't comply. Do you make a follow-up on them to ensure that they end up credible?
Okay, I'm
going to
put that Shirin would have come
but
up.
Just to assist the meeting, because remember, Darren said, the team must just pick up, then I would assume that would allow responses. Then in the event that one of our questions are not addressed, then we come up.
Mm.
Otherwise, we won't.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I'll start with you, Honorable Chair. In terms of the cancellations, roughly on annual basis, we received plus minus 900 cancellations. We've got a 24% rejoin rate, which means those that have cancelled come back onto the system and remain as graded members. The reasons for cancellations for those that remain cancelled are cited as economic situations. Establishments closing down, and affordability issues. In cases where we have people not meeting the core requirements, I'll just quote two birds with one stone. Part and parcel of the deliverables of the assessors is to provide guidance to these businesses. So if you go and you assess a property and you see that they are failing in certain criteria, what we currently have as procedure is number two, there's something that we call grace period, where we give you a certain time frame. in order for you to now ensure that you put facilities in place to meet the recommended star grading level or the category that you want to be applying. This can range from a minimum of 1 month up to a minimum of 6 months. A hand-holding process is going to take place because the assessor will then say, this is what you are lacking in, this is what you need to put in place so that the next time that I come, you are then awarded accordingly. So there's that guidance and assistance that we touched on earlier on. If now you come and you grade Nelly's B and B as a 3-star, but Nelly wants to be at a 4-star, operating at that place, we also are able to give you what we call an improvement report. To say, Nelly, for you now to move from a 3-star to a 4-star, I wanted my next assessment to have this and this and this in place. Okay. On the issue of accepting cows and cattle, as grading feed payments, unfortunately we do not. We may advise that perhaps you sell it on eBay. you get whatever means of cash that you can, so that you are able to pay your grading fee. But we also rely on the support program. Where are you in terms of compliance, in terms of ensuring that you apply for the tourism incentive program? How fully involved is your province in terms of the special funding projects, which will then introduce to you so that you will end up not having to pay anything at all if your province is dedicated as one of the Northwest and so forth provinces that I've enlisted. There was also a question, Honorable Chair, around of how many products are we working with? So we are basing our calculations around 2010, where almost every second household or every second business was an accommodation establishment and venue. But we are also working hand in hand with SSA in getting a proper audit of how many accommodation establishments that are still out there, despite them having closed down, despite the economic climate. So that is a work in progress as such. Okay? Honorable Peter, yes, I was not very forthcoming in terms of how then we deal with the misconduct of assessors, but I will give you an example of an assessor who presented fake assessments in the sense that they never went and conducted physical assessments, but presented it to head office, collated photos, made up some nice bedtime stories of what he found there, which was not the case. We had a complaint from the actual client to say, I've been awarded, however, nobody has come to my establishment to check that everything is in place. We terminated the assessor's contract, and we laid charges against them. So to circumvent that going forward, we've put now in the current service provider agreement that should any of our traveling guests, team members or clients be found that they are not aligned with the quality standards of which we've accredited them with, we will take the following processes in place. In that, number one, the assessor will actually be paid, will ask to pay the penalty fee of what we have paid out because it's a disservice. We will lay charges against them of any establishments that are found to be wanting of the quality standards, and we will then terminate their contract as such and blacklist them accordingly. Yes, that's quite a lot. In terms of statutory obligations, yes, I listed some criteria and legal requirements that are needed for the tourism incentive program, but there are certain statutory obligations that need to be in place when we go and conduct a physical assessment. Part and parcel of that will be the occupational and healthy certificates. So we are working with Department of Health to ensure that the kitchen from which these food items are being served from is in fact of quality and in good practice. We also look at your public liability, insurance cover. We look at the zoning laws and we look at the municipal prescriptions and regulations of where they are operating in. So it is pivotal for us to have those in place when we go there, or else we just do not grade you until we get those in place. If a renewal is not activated, they simply become cancelled members. The team does endeavor to get in contact with them to see whether there are possibilities of renewing, if it was a late payment, if it was perhaps lack of availability from the side of their property or the business. But what then happens thereafter if they do not rejoin kicks into what Genevieve was talking about in terms of issuing out the warning letters and following up with the law enforcement authorities within those respective provinces. There was one that spoke to advantages and disadvantages of grading assessors. I would say the advantages are, just to take 10 steps back, in terms of the revenue that we receive from grading fees, we receive about 22 million, okay? And majority of that goes to assessor fees, okay? However, we did conduct an exercise as to what if we were to make these assessors permanent. It was well beyond the budget that we currently receive from National Department of Tourism. It was along the range of 45 million because it will mean now we are no longer a quality assurance body, but we need to also enforce, also have permanent monitors who will be ensuring that you know, quality assurance within the tourism product happens. So the advantage is a reduction in cost towards our operating or operational activities, but there is a disadvantage again in the sense that they are also independent businesses, so they are wanting income. So you will find the bad apples, obviously, trying to submit assessments that are lacking, just so to make a quick buck. But in far as operational costs are concerned and the upskilling thereof, it seems to still be working. Okay. I think I've answered, but if I come across anything else, I will then attend to it.
I had two of the same questions from Honourable Moseka and Nyeni, and that was the expired certificates. How do we actually crack down on that? So just to echo the sentiments of my colleague Nyeni, what happens is when we have our database of members that are about to expire, 4 months before their expiry date reaches, we send them an email just encouraging them on how to resubscribe or how to apply for funding opportunities. Should they ignore that, once that cancellation actually kicks in, all those leads of databases or all of those leads of establishments that are cancelled, our team actually sends it back to the assessors because this is business leads for them. So as much as it may be cancelled, that is where their resilience kicks in because Nelly then disseminates that cancelled database to her team. They go through it and see how many of those they can actually maybe reschedule meetings with, do appointments to get them to resubscribe. Over and above that, the reporting process of illegal advertising comes through the assessors as well. So Nelly echoes sentiments about the fact that once we actually grade a property, do we do spot checks? So often, majority of the time, I would say 80% of our illegal advertising tickets that are reported actually come from the assessors themselves. When they do spot checks and they see that there's an old brass plaque in the properties, they take our pictures immediately, email it to us, and that's where we raise and open those cases immediately. What we're trying to do is we're trying to make it more accessible to the public to report illegal advertising to us. So what we will be launching in the next couple of weeks is the WhatsApp business line that we will have, which is our TGCSA WhatsApp business line, whereby you would be able to check if a property is graded by simply a hashtag and the property name, or if they're not graded and you'd like to report illegal advertising, it's as simple as taking out a picture of their illegal advertising and WhatsApping that through to us. We raise the ticket, try and get them to resubscribe, or if they refuse to, we completely get them to remove all the signs again. But just to echo the sentiments of our colleague that just left, I do think that she hit the nail on the head. We definitely do need some sort of higher authority in terms of having or equipping us with the proper tools and resources in order to fight this battle and get them to recognize the authority behind it as well. But to answer your question, a lot of our reporting comes through the form of our service.
Gomba, I think you also had a question with regards to after awarding the star, do we then just let lie low and only see you the next year? That is not the case. The team of provincial quality assurance specialists based in the provinces actually have targets on what we call post-audit verification. I've requested that 10 months they at least do a roundup of the graded establishments within the provinces of which they oversee and actually see that everything is still in place. We're currently also in the process of appointing a service provider who will conduct mystery guest visits at any given time, just like the post audit. We do not schedule them, we just rock up at your door and just do a courtesy call, but it's also just to do a walkabout and see that whatever was submitted by that assessor is in fact in place. Okay. And then the other question was from honorable member to say that the team is based in suburban areas. How then do we reach out to the rural areas? We do so with partnerships with the provincial counterparts, with the municipalities, and we also piggyback on quite a few of the Department of Tourism's workshops, be it the capacity building workshops, the service excellence workshops, where we then go to the rural areas, the likes of Jozini, Northwestern, and so forth. Okay. And then, no, I think
the
Wi-Fi is definitely a criteria that needs to be met from 3 stars, 4 and 5. 4 and 5 needs to extend to the rooms. Okay, I'll give over to my colleague now.
With regards to the Wi-Fi, Nelly has covered that. We also have the criteria that is listed on our website. So in terms of the question that you asked about how do we grade your backpacker, it must be very difficult. As I said earlier in my presentation, that one has to be familiar in terms of what is expected between a bread and breakfast as well as a guest house. There are differentiating factors. So what you will expect from a hotel cannot be the same as a backpacker. So there is a difference in terms of what we would cover in terms of our criteria. So to also answer your question with regards to the continental breakfast, it is definitely in here. There is a level of expectation in terms of your 3-star, what should a breakfast be, as opposed to your 4-star as well as your 5-star.
Thank you very much to the team. Chair, I'm going to try and just quickly pick up the ones that I had yet to answer. I think the biggest one is the policy discussion, which is the discussion around compulsory or voluntary or free versus levy. Nelly mentioned a number. We generate in the region of 22 to 24 million rand a year in fees. And whilst we are advocates for free because it will give us a much greater spread, we need to be cognizant of the fact that that 22 million or 24 million has to come from somebody somewhere else. So it does increase the reliance on the state, and it would mean that as a unit of South African tourism, we would need to be allocated more of the budget to be able to cover that particular cost that we incur. So that's, I think, a big consideration. Compulsory versus voluntary. I think the general feeling I'm getting from the room is voluntary is the way to go, but it's making it free. In terms of the questions raised and concerns raised about the targets, for a long time we were part of a five-year planning process. And as a result of that planning process, we had annual increments in terms of our targets. And what eventually happened was the targets got completely away from us. So it got to a point where we were having to acquire in the region of 1,000 properties, extra properties in a year in order to meet targets. So what we did for this particular year in question is we've reweighted our targets to make it still a stretch, to make sure the team are working towards something, but something that is a lot more achievable. So that's the point you noted and picked up in the change in targets. Why are we not meeting targets? Unfortunately, in a voluntary environment, it's very difficult because you have to continuously sell value. What is the value of being graded? What is the value of being graded? And this is especially prevalent when you're having to pay for it. So again, it begs the question, if it was free, would the value offering and the value consideration change and the take-up also change? And as Nelly also pointed out, there's many, many changes that take place in the economic environment, in the business environment that affect these small businesses. And in some cases they close down, they no longer operate. In some cases they change their specific mandate, so they no longer operate as a by night, and they change to a long-term rental. And in some cases they just can't afford the grading, so they decide to relinquish it in response or in preference to doing something within the business itself. Honourable Defrontis, you mentioned 15% of the large hotel groups are grading. I think maybe that's worded incorrectly. 15% of our database, of our membership, is the large hotel groups. There's about, at the moment, in the region of 850 graded hotels on our books, which is a very large percentage. I don't know the percentage offhand, but it's a very large percentage of the formal hotel sector. The formal hotel sector is probably where we have the highest level of infiltration and grading usage, because they use it for building their competitive sets, and they use it for competitive price position. So it's more prevalent in hotels than anywhere else. But I think the 15% you're talking of is the percentage of hotels as a percentage of our entire graded database. Honourable Gumbi mentioned our involvement with the community tourism organisations. Chair and honourable members, we deal from a provincial right down to the community tourism organisations. The work that Nelly and the team were talking of is often done at an economic development and tourism level. An example would be the Northwest and the Northern Cape, where they've identified properties in the smaller municipalities and often the surrounding areas that they want to get graded to begin to position that particular dorpie or town as a quality assured product. And they actually provide us with a list of the products they want to grade. So it is enabling both the community tourism but also the local tourism organization or agency for that particular municipality. Nelly touched on the advantages versus the disadvantages of having our grading assessed internal and external. At the moment, the reason we have adopted this particular model is purely cost-driven. It's because we don't carry the costs of things like pension, we don't carry the things of costs like medical aid, the transport costs, all of those things at the moment are covered by the percentage of the fee that we give to the assessor. And again, it's a cost exercise. If we were to internalize, then there would be an enormous cost burden on both us and the state. Honourable Gumbi also mentioned that in the perception study he mentioned, he's quite correct, 54% of the properties and the participants in the sector that we surveyed indicated that the cost was too high. And it's for exactly that reason that we partnered with the Department of Tourism and we unlocked the grading support funding, which Nelly had mentioned. We are now able to provide up to a 90% discount on grading for any property, and obviously because we have much greater numbers of SMEs in our books, it's focusing on the SMEs. In an environment where you would pay 3,500 rand for grading, you now, with this support of the National Department, being able to pay 350 rand a year, which is a much more affordable number. Knox, I think, has covered the basic quality verifications, which was a question about how do we deal with those that are ungradable, but also at the same time those that are homestead. We've used criteria that focus on, are they clean, hygienic, are they safe, as part of the minimum requirements for that basic quality verification scheme, and I think that, that's going to take place very shortly. There was a question, I think, Honourable Motek, I think you mentioned this, the one about the numbers. So the, in the hotel space, a hotel can have, must have a minimum of 10. And in the small hotel or the boutique hotel, it must be a maximum of 80. So the one is a minimum number and the other one is a maximum number. We're not saying that you can have a minimum number if you see what I'm saying. Correct, yeah, it can't go past 80. Expiry certificates you've spoken of, the audits you do on a regular basis, backpackers and technology, the Wi-Fi we've addressed as well. The team have also spoken about the occupational health and safety standards that we require for the Department of Health and others as part of the assessment. And then I only think the one that we didn't mention was the benchmarking exercise. We did in fact include the Middle Eastern countries, so Abu Dhabi as well as Dubai. We have their criteria with us and we did consult them. It's just not listed in the full, all of them in the presentation share, so we did definitely consult them as a leader in the global market. I think, Chair, that covers so there was a question, I think Honourable Boomer, you mentioned the pricing and how do we get involved in the pricing at all. So because our mandate is quality assurance, obviously we try and stay in our lane as far as possible. We go out and we make sure that the product has got a star rating that represents the kind of facilities that it would offer a potential guest. We then leave the pricing up to the commercial decisions of those properties, because guests speak with their feet. You know, if you've got a two-star that is charging you 800 Rand a room per night, and you've got another star that is charging you 300 Rand per room per night, I guarantee you guests are going to start to utilize the one that is more affordable. But we leave those commercial and pricing decisions completely to the owners of those properties, because we don't want to get involved in determining their sustainability and their profitability. I think it's a dangerous ground to play in. I think, Chair, that's all from our side. Thank you very much. If there's any follow-ups, we'll be happy to take them.
Yeah, so we leave it to the mic. Just before we close, are you ready, man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I think the last time we are going to shift trading for free and maybe 50% in the small time. I didn't get that question.
It's a proposal,
yeah.
Which I thought
noted
and are going to be looking at seriously, because it's an incentive for establishments in those areas, including the one I raised, which I think it was Yoli's, in the Yoli.
Nelly.
The service provider, if we can just get the framework, not the terms of reference, but the framework that is going to inform the approach of the service provider. Just to look at it, because we speak for village people, not actually rural. Because when we say rural, this game parks, which are state of the art, 5-star, they include it in the rural. That's why we want to confine ourselves to village, so that we can look at that, because I really think we must help our people in villages to have some tools going to experience village life. So we may have to look for a new category completely, so that we don't scratch our heads too much about where to fit them and so on. So you will find the name for it. So when you come to South Africa, there's this category. If you want to, then we can do that. And I also want to suggest that maybe we must help you in that regard, because we are going to be working with provinces and municipalities on this thing of assessors. Because tourism is a concurrent function. I think we must talk to the municipalities as part of bylaws, they must find a way of including this in their bylaws.
Yes.
So I think we'll have to push for that. So that they can alleviate the pressure of you having to have assessors all over. But by legislation, they will be compelled to do the assessment and send the report. So I think we must just work with you to push the municipalities in that direction. I know tourism has got many organizations and associations, but I want to suggest two associations. The first one will be Association of Graded Tourism Establishments, if it's not there. Association of Graded Tourism Establishment. The other one is Association of Ungraded Tourism Establishment. So it's AUTE and AGT. Just think about it, because you see in the AU, there is this peer review mechanism thing, because African countries realize that it will be difficult sometimes to impose certain things on countries to unite the African continent, right? So I think if there is this peer review type of mechanism among those who are graded, and the ungraded ones also coming together, and you interacting with them as a group, and indicating to them, not individually, why it's important for them as they meet in their seminars either once or twice a year, you use that platform to begin to appeal to them and reduce the number gradually. So that AGT, Association of Graded Tourism Establishment, must always be higher than the ungraded ones. Of course, there will be the third one which we are going to work on. I can't think of the name now. My one of the village and cow down and all those things. I'll apply my mind to it. So that they can be formalized in some kind of a structure. And they will also impose certain things which are not mandatory related around peer review. The mechanism, they can share experiences and all those things. I think there will be a lot of advantages in them doing that, and us helping the ungraded ones to graduate, interacting with them through their executive, and there may be things they want to discuss on their own, the ungraded ones, you know, and so that among themselves they can advise one another on what to do some of these things. So we want to take this opportunity to thank the team. You are the leader of the team. The team that came in. Yeah, as the leader of the team, I want to thank you for the knowledge you have imparted to the portfolio committee. I think we have learned a lot. We have been looking forward to meet with the creative council. It contributes a lot to the sexual integrity of South Africa as a product. The country, right? So you are adding a lot to how we are perceived elsewhere. Because if you don't do this work efficiently and effectively, it's going to impact on how we are perceived. So from a quality perspective, that's why quality. It does help a lot when people elsewhere look at South Africa as a product, right? Not as a country, as a product. So that's a branding and marketing function, which I think you are doing well in making sure that at that level, especially for international tourists, we can improve. So we hope that by the time we end our 5 years here, we'll have made some progress and we can point at practical things of a new category of villages. And they will forever thank us for not forgetting about them. You can't change their life. If they've got cattle in their crowd, we can't say to them, get rid of them.
Yeah.
But if we develop something that is tailor-made for them, then it's up to the consumer to decide where to go and enjoy tourism. Honorable Gallo, our president, you are welcome. We did get an indication that you are indeed coming, and you are committed to coming. So we thank you for gracing the occasion of the Portfolio Committee and the Grading Council. Honorable Gallo, our colleague from the Grading Council and the Tourism Department, is the president of the AIC. He is part of the committee. Otherwise, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we don't have lunch. But the interaction was very, very productive. We will see you as we do tourism also throughout the Republic of South Africa. Yeah. Saturday, we will give you an indication by tomorrow. Okay, we'll give it to you today.
Okay.
Today, about your invite. Lily there. In Pretoria.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll give you an indication as to whether we'll be there or not today. In the next hour,
thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to encourage you to attend. I think you will be super impressed.
Yeah. I will try my best.
The best of the best.
Yeah. Otherwise, enjoy your trip and thank you, Bethel, wherever you are going.
Thank you.
Give our regards to the constitutional Hill people. Well, that's with minutes, honorable member. Can we take them as right?
Yeah.
Agreed? There is also this tourism resolution tracking tool, which was circulated to members. Can we also adopt it and take it as work in progress?
Yes.
Exactly. Agreed?
Yes.
There is also this invite. Who is going, who is not going? Lady Zev.
Lady Zev is going to be doing the dad.
Is that Paul?
Okay.
So, Honorable Khalifa is not going. President? That is Paul. Is that the Mojega?
I'm committed to this.
Saturday in Swahili. 16 hours.
Saturday.
Times Square.
Tonight.
Arena. Aramis Avenue, Main Lane, Pretoria 0181.
Are
you going or not?
I'm going.
I'm
still committed to
it. Oh, we drive it and come.
You will attend Kumba, you are next door.
I will attend and come back. I sleep home. There was no book accommodation.
That's fine.
Very
so
close
so
to
you'll be going. Mampimpi. I'll check with you.
Call me and leave.
Yeah.
Myself, I'm not sure because Saturdays I do what is called NITIC and NITIC political outreach program.
NITIC and
NITIC? Yes. NITIC and